And quite frankly, I don't know why they didn't do the damn finger scene.
He looks like the homeless guy they keep tricking to do stuff.
See, that happens to me every day when I come home from work.
He bad damned the shit out of him.
Now who thinks that white people look the same, Fergal? Now who thinks that?
I did just lose a dog.
Hello and welcome to Movie
Smash!
Hello and welcome to Movie Smash, the show where we dive headfirst into cockpit movies outside the MCU. If you're new to the show, thanks for joining us. If you've been here before, you know the drill. Each episode, we're going to smash for a movie whose source materials from a graphic novel or a comic. Is it worth revisiting? Should it be forgotten? Let's find out. This is Movie Smash. I'm one of your hosts, Chris Roberts. I'm the founder of All Panel Creations. With me today, I have a man who has his own special kind of history, Jeremy Parmentier.
That's right. This is Jeremy Parmentier of the also of the Retrovaniacs podcast and a former member of the band and orchestra. So I also have a history of violins.
And with me tonight as well, I have a man who, after seeing this movie, has a newfound love of stairs, Fergal Amayo.
Yeah. No, actually, my name's not Fergal. It's Tom. Tom Stahl. I don't know if you know that, but or maybe Joey. I'm not sure, but I'm actually the founder and owner of Gotham Knight Comics. We're nerdlicious. Nerd everything is what we bring to the table. And boy, are we strutting those nerd limits tonight. So let's see what we do with that history of violence. I may get violent after we talk about this, but we'll see how it plays.
I hope not. So our guest with us tonight is Jordan Ramirez from the Film Talk with Jordan Ramirez. Hello, Jordan.
Hi, this is Jordan Ramirez. I am the host of my podcast series, Film Talk with Jordan Ramirez, which you can catch on Spotify, Spotify for Creators, and YouTube Podcasts. And you can catch my blog post at Film Talk with Jordan Ramirez podcast.wordpress.com. So thank you guys for having me on the show.
I'm glad to have you here. Our movie tonight is 2005's A History of Violence, starring Viggo Aragorn Mortensen and Maria Bellio and Ed Harris and William Hurt and a lot of other people. Directed by David Cronenberg, which is very surprising.
Mm-hmm. That's probably the most surprising thing about this movie. I'm not going to spoil it, but that's the most surprising piece of it, and I'm just going to leave it there.
My name is Tom. It's Joey. You tell me.
Sarah! My daughter, where is she?
What's going on, Dad?
They thought they knew me. Thought I was somebody else.
Nothing to worry about, Mrs. Stahl. I've been watching over her.
I don't know what you want, and I don't really care.
You should care about what I want, because what I want might change your life. But why don't you ask Tom, and ask him how come he's so good at killing people?
Okay, before we jump into the movie, guys, I saw a recent article that said director of Thor and Love and Thunder. I will butcher his name. Thank you. He has been tasked to direct a reboot of Judge Dredd. Do you want to see that movie?
No, I think the reboot with Carl Urban was probably one of the more comic accurate versions of Judge Dredd. I don't necessarily know. I don't really know if I want Thor Love and Thunder on Judge Dredd.
I haven't seen this movie, nor did I see the other versions, but I would rather see it. I know I listened to your podcast about the Judge Dredd movie, so I could either watch that or the remake that came out in the 2010s, but I don't feel like I want to see another remake of this movie, of this comic or whatever.
I mean, as long as he doesn't have Rob Schneider in it, I'm in. I'm in to see what he does with it. It can't be any worse than that one with Sylvester Stallone, so I'm in.
I hate to tell you, Jeremy, guess who is playing Judge Dredd?
Now, okay, you know what? Now I'm actually more interested. Now, if he's going to play Judge Dredd, that would be... And that's the tie-in. It's a future alternate universe. He went through some warp, and now he's Judge Dredd. I'll watch it. I'll be there.
Yeah, it's interesting. When I read that, I was like, now, we have not covered Dredd yet. We're covering that actually in a few episodes, a couple months. That was a great version of the movie. And also, like, Love and Thunder and Ragnarok, that's just a different... That's more comic than what Judge Dredd really is, which is dark and brooding. So I'm a little worried about that one, but I guess we'll see when it comes out.
Yeah.
You picked this movie, A History of Violence. Why did you pick this?
So I picked this movie because of two people that I'm sort of fans of, John Waters and Josh Olson. So Josh Olson, he would talk constantly about this movie on his podcast, co-hosted by Joe Dante, The Movies That Made Me. And he would talk about his relationship with working with David Cronenberg, and also he read the source material. And John Waters, because he put this movie at number 3 on his top 10 favorite films of 2005, and I'll talk about his review of the movie a little bit later on the show, but that's the reason why I picked this movie.
Okay, well, that's a better reason than we get for most people.
Yeah,
truly.
Before seeing this movie, were you familiar that it was a comic?
No, I was not aware it was based on a graphic novel or a comic. So no, I have not.
I'm assuming Fergal did because he's our normal comic expert. But I also did not know at the time that this was based on a graphic novel.
I'm familiar with the writer, obviously, John Wagner. I'm familiar with that guy. British guy. Great story from Judge Dredd's. Made a couple really cool Britpop comics. But no, this is something I didn't read this book. Like, it's not something I'm like, and I usually find the more obscure titles, but sort of like Cemetery Man, this one fell off my worldview.
Honestly, until I was working with the date and had to type this movie into our possible list of movies, I had no idea. I remember this thing being in the theaters. I never saw it. I just thought it was another sort of like Western-y kind of action movie. But yeah, I had no idea this was a comic. Mm-hmm. Now, for me, this was the first time I've seen this movie. For the show. Was this the first time for you guys seeing History of Violence?
No, I've seen this movie before. I didn't. So here come for all the crowds and folks. You're going to get the first time I've ever said this. I did not see this in the theater. This was one of those ones that sort of accidentally came on the TV. I was like, oh, this is interesting. But then I went, because of this show, I went and actually got the book because I wanted to read it because it is Rob Wagner, and I did a little bit of digging on this, and I got to tell you, I like the book better. I like the book better. I'm just going to say it outright.
No, I saw this movie maybe a few years back, maybe the late 2010s on Tubi, so I only knew about it after the fact. So this is not my first time viewing it, so no.
This is my first time viewing it, but I thought until I was sitting down that we were going to watch the movie that actually is American History X, which is not a history of violence. It is a violent movie. Far darker than the thing we're going to be talking about, although this is also not a light film. But I was very excited that it was not American History X. So that's very good. I've not seen this before. And thankfully, it's not American History X.
Is American History X a comic?
No, I have not. Well, I didn't know this was either. And for some reason, maybe it's the names. I just had it blended together in my head as the same movie. And thankfully, I was wrong.
What? I'm sorry. I was tuned out. Are you saying that you confused Edward Norton and Viggo Mortensen? You confused Aragorn with the Hulk? That's about as far apart as you can view those two types.
All us white guys look the same. No, honestly, it's just the name. It was the title of the movie. I didn't, like, if I would have looked at the actors, I was like, yeah, I know that's not the same people. But just the names of the movies blended together in my head, and I thought that's what we were watching. And I was very excited that it was not. So, no, this is the first time I've seen the actual movie we're going to watch for the first time.
Well, yeah. I am looking forward to first, Jeremy, your confusion between those two movies. And Fergal, I'm curious how this thing differs from the actual book, because I have not gotten a chance to read it yet.
Well, I mean, it's
not yet.
Oh, not yet.
Hold your tongue. God, we're not there. We're not even into the spoiler warning yet.
I would love to give the synopsis, though. I know we have a guest, but I'm the only one of our crew that has not given a synopsis. So but I'm going to give it to Jordan because he's our guest, but I would love
first, I need from you a history of this comic book.
Oh, yeah. 1997, Vertigo imprint, released by Paradox. Three to four part story, really. I'd say three parts with a little hang on the ending, and just sort of a one-off and basically a glorification of violence, a glorification of trying to restart identities, what's important, and really what will your extorner family do in those environments? That's all I can tell you without giving too much away, I guess.
I'm going to give you the spoiler warning. That way, people, you can give away as much as you want. So if this is your first time joining us, just a heads up. We're going to discuss certain elements of this lesser-known Lord of the Rings spinoff. Consider yourself warned. Jordan, before we get started, why don't you walk us through actually what happens in this movie, and don't let Fergal interrupt you.
Okay. So this movie is about Tom Stahl. He is a family man. He has a wife named Edie, and he has two children, Jack and Sarah, and he owns a diner in this small town of Millbrook, Indiana. And there were two criminals. They came in. They were going to basically rob the place. And Tom ends up beating the shit out of these two criminals. And he becomes a local hero until somebody reveals his true identity. And that is Carl Fogarty. And that's when his life starts to spiral out of control.
Yeah, it sounds like what happened to me in my teens.
Yeah, I agree to that.
This movie really is about the characters. At least that's what I feel. I mean, there's a plot to it, but it's not like a ton of things happen. There are just a few scenes and a few action pieces. It's really about the characters. In fact, Tom Stahl is our main character. He is what? He's not really bipolar. He's just hiding his true identity. How did you guys feel Viggo did with this role?
I thought kind of looking. So again, I'm going to be biased to the comic book because I think the comic book does a better job of kind of how you would imagine. But again, this is Viggo, man. This is Viggo Mortensen. This is Aragorn. Bro, so I think he did pretty well. He held his own. But if you're going to want my thought, it's Ed Harris, bro. I'm just going to leave it right there. It's Ed Harris. I think Fogarty was the bomb in this entire thing.
When Tom Stahl is being confronted about his past, about who he really is, did you guys think it was like a witness protection thing? Do you think it was like a lost memory thing? What was your theory watching this movie?
For me, I thought it was sort of like a lost memory thing. It's almost like Dr. Henry Jekyll trying to bury Mr. Hyde. Almost like he's trying to basically bury this ugly character whom he had forgotten. And there's a scene later that he mentioned. He wandered into the desert and he became Tom Stahl for 3 years. And you're asking yourself this question, like, well, what was the only thing that he did that that made him want to be Tom Stahl? And it's like, you're trying to think in your head, how did that happen? I don't know what happened in my head that made me want to be this character, that want to make me be this sort of milquetoast type of guy that's living this family life. But yeah, I think for me, it's like he's just trying to bury his past identity situation. That's what I thought it was about.
Yeah, and I think he does a good job. I wasn't certain where they were going to go with it, right? I figured it probably wasn't amnesia because he knew enough that he was trying to, like, he was worried. As soon as he saw it was on TV, he was concerned. Like, he knew, like, this is bad. People are going to see me. So you knew he had an idea of what he was. So I thought maybe it was with witness protection. That would have made a lot of sense. But they even ask him, like, are you part of witness protection? And he says, no, I don't know if you're allowed to say you are if you are in witness protection, if it's not through the whoever it is that puts people in that. But either way, it was like, I wasn't sure where they were going, but eventually it's, you know, after the second, you know, the time he really sees him outside in front of the house when he runs into Carl outside of the house where they hold his son captive or whatever, that's when you realize, like, okay, no, he is this other person. This is not a case of mistaken identity. This is not a case of amnesia. This is clearly a guy trying to hide. Now, what I do want to say about that hiding is he's managed to stay as Tom Stahl for long enough to have two children. He's been married to the same person. They're a family. It's not like he has, like, this other son that was from her previous marriage. Nope, that's his kid. Both his parents' kids. He's been Tom Stahl for 20 years, maybe 15, 20 years. I don't know how old his son is, but he's in high school. So he's been able to fake his identity. He was able to get a loan to own a business. He's been able to do all these other things. So I figured it had to be witness protection, but no, it's not. So I'm not sure how he was able to do all those other things. That's the most unrealistic part of this movie, is he was able to fake his identity enough to actually become a functioning human being in 2005. Like, that's not a thing that's going to happen.
Because you're not a mob boss, man. You got to be thinking like a mob hitman. They got these things on lock, bro. You've seen, like, John Wick or Jason Bourne or these guys. They open up, like, boxes and have passports and IDs. I'm pretty sure he whacked somebody along the way in the desert.
Well, didn't he say when he was in the hospital bed, something along the lines of, like, she goes, you're not even Tom Stahl. Who is Tom Stahl? And didn't he say, like, oh, he wasn't using it?
Yeah, someone who wasn't using it. He stole someone's identity, I'm sure, which is what... You know, that's what the people
is that
do
mob
if they're trying
for killing somebody, because I don't necessarily know if he stole, because if you steal something, that person's going to be alive enough to tell somebody.
Well, it was vague enough. You didn't know at that time exactly what his history was. So just the fact that someone else wasn't using it could have been like, I stole a birth certificate or whatever it was. But he was able to basically be Tom Stahl.
It fell off the back of the identity truck.
There you go.
Here's the thing. I think all of you guys are hitting why this movie did so well and garnered so much praise. First off, David Cronenberg shot it because he's not your normal, everyday, average director. And number two, it's little shit like that that makes you go, oh, wow, that what? I mean, so you should put the comic book as just like an original source material and just throw it over at this movie, because that's what really, I mean, there have been people saying the comic book sucked to the movie. I'm not one of them, but it's Cronenberg.
Mm-hmm.
At the beginning, it says David Cronenberg directed this movie, and I'm watching it, and it's like he doesn't know his past, and I'm expecting some sort of body horror to occur, like an alien comes out of his chest or some craziness. Never happened.
No, the closest you get is that the fights are extremely violent. The few fights that happen, like when he takes out the two wandering criminals, I thought, so let's go back a step to explain how he gets found. So he's, you know, the first like 20 minutes of this movie is just his regular life. You see his kids, his son's having some problems at school with bullying or whatever. He's working in this town. He doesn't drive for whatever reason. I don't know if it's that his car is broken. I think that's what they end up saying later. But at first they decided he didn't have a license. But his wife drops him off at his restaurant that he opens, his little cafe. And these guys come in that have just been wandering around. You know they're a comic book bad because they kill a child in the introduction of the movie. That means the guarantee is a bad guy.
Yeah.
There's no like positive spin on these two guys. They're clearly bad guys. You don't know who they are. I thought at first they were tied to the syndicate that comes to find them later on. But I don't think it is. I think they are just random bad guys. But because he killed these two guys and it was like big news for this small town, he was all over the news. Everyone's like, oh, yeah, you know, it's the same kind of feel good story as if, you know, someone stops like the guy that just got in Michigan, I guess, that just stabbed all those people in Travis City.
Yep.
Right. I don't want to talk about that, but like, I'm just saying in general, there was, after that happened, there was like, oh, yeah, this guy helped grab him and take him down. Like, so he's like a local hero. Same situation here, except that the fight, when they come in, he basically smashes a coffee pot in the guy's face and shoots the guy in the face. You see his, like, he's all over the ground. He's still alive. And just like, that's Cronenberg. That's the only part of this movie that I was like, that's where he came from.
Well, that and the shotgun chest, right? Yes. That and the shotgun wound. I mean, I think there were a few scenes. Oh, when he stabbed on the guy's neck, when William Hurt jumped on the guy's neck. That was definitely Cronenberg. I mean, there were pieces of that all through the movie, but that's where this movie gets all its cash.
Speaking of that scene, though, where he steps on his neck and the blood's like coming out of it, that was the toned down version. The international version of the movie, there's far more blood.
Mm.
In fact, if you watch the DVD, yes, I do have it, that there is a thing of where you can see the different scenes, the international version versus the US version. And there are two in particular that are much bloodier.
You know, you'll never pick that DVD up again. You know, it'll just sit on your shelf, gather dust. I promise you. Who's willing to put a buck on it right now? I will.
Oh, no, I am, because it's a four movie DVD collection of The Watchmen, History of Violence, Jonah Hex, and the fourth one. And we're covering all those movies over the next few months. So I will be using that box over and over again.
You just lost a dollar.
I did just lose a dollar. And I was unaware, so I don't know if it was a fair bet, because if I would watch it if it was Jonah Hex. I mean, Jonah Hex is a great movie.
So for our listeners, stay tuned. In about three episodes, Jonah Hex.
You guys ever heard that the Criterion is going to release this in October and it's going to be part of their DVD collection?
Oh, that's
this
cool.
Movie? That is
interesting. This movie is going to be part of Criterion, and they're going to have an interview with a new interview with the screenwriter, John Scholson, along with a new 4K UHD set.
Oh, I like that. I mean, again, it's not a bad movie. I mean, no. You know, that's what makes this thing so interesting, is that the movie itself, as a separate property, drawing inspiration from A History of Violence, is a great movie. But to really understand the movie, and then why they brought Cronenberg in, because there was the way the book is written, that fits his style, but then they completely changed it.
Well, actually, with Cronenberg, when they brought him in on it, they did not tell him it was based on a comic. In fact, they withheld that from him until after he signed on board, because he stated at one point, he never wanted to do a comic book movie, and they held that from him. He'd signed on board. They said, oh, by the way, it's a comic. Too late.
No takesy-backsies.
Exactly. You mentioned William Hurt playing his brother, Richie Cusack.
Yeah, there's not even a brother in the comic. That's one of the biggest, most glaring things. There is no brother. There is a best friend and no brother. Name Richie.
I used to live outside Philadelphia. The beard William Hurt had was very Philadelphia. It really felt like...
What decade was that Philadelphia, though? I mean, because that felt like Philadelphia circa 1985, 1998,
I was there in 2007. That beard was still there.
Really? People actually wore that like that? No mustache?
Yeah. Nope. Wow. But I understand they did change it from being an Italian mob to an Irish mob.
They did a lot more than that.
Yeah, there are some pretty notable changes in the second half of this story.
What were the changes that we're talking about for the end?
So hold on. Let's before we jump into the differences there, I'd like to say, like, Fergal brought up a good point. The original comic, it's kind of like three beats and a footnote. This movie follows the same kind of, there's three beats. There's the first part, which is the everyman in town. These criminals come to town. They hold up his cafe, threaten to kill somebody. And so then he unleashes on them, but in a way that you're not still quite sure, like, did he just get lucky with the way this went down? But what, you know, he clearly is not afraid of guns, but he's also not, it's not John Wick, right? It's not like he's not, you know, kicking the door down and killing 17 guys and be like standing there with the cool smoking guns. Like, he takes some damage, he goes to the hospital, he's the everyman that manages to save the day, gets famous, and that's the end of the first part, right? Not that he gets famous, but that's, he stops this. Second part is, after he gets famous, he's on TV, and this person from this other mob shows up to this town. And that's Ed Harris's character, Carl Fogarty. He was my favorite character in the movie. I love Ed Harris as a bad guy anyway. I think he's great as a bad guy.
I mean, he's good as a bad or a good guy. Ed Harris we're talking about.
He's good, but as a bad guy specifically, he's got a very,
which other movies are you thinking of besides this one?
Honestly, it wasn't even movies, although I've seen him in a lot of movies, but Westworld, like, there's the bad guy in Westworld, the man in black whole time. Yeah. Like, it's that very much like he's menacing, but he still comes across as a regular person. It's not like those bad guys that he killed at the beginning that were in the hotel and killed the girl. Like, those were comic book bad people, right? They're just not. He's a lifetime mobster character, right? He's clearly he's there for a reason. He's there to get even because, and you know, he's telling everybody that he's there to even a score or whatever. He's got this giant scar on his face that it turns out was something that Tom in his former life had done to him. And he's got ties to this family that he basically, you know, killed someone and escaped. And they thought he was assumed he was hopefully dead. But then when he shows up on TV, they knew he wasn't. To escape, he does whatever he has to do that you don't get all the full details to banish, become this other person. So the second half of him is Carl keeps following him through town. He threatens his family, captures his son at one point, and it's him, you know, trying to convince everybody, or really convince Tom to be honest with everyone and himself and come back with him to Philadelphia to even the score. That's the second. The second tier is his face off against Carl, that he does manage to take Carl out. And you'd think that was the end of any other movie. Like, that would be the end of most movies, is where that second beat would hit. But instead, this third beat is he then gets a call from his brother, who's now is like, you need to come back or we're going to just keep sending people out after you. And it's him making this trip to Philadelphia to take, you know, to see what his brother needs, right? To try to even the score. You don't know exactly what his plan is, but he knows he has no other choice. His family's not safe unless he leaves and does this thing. That's the third beat of the story. I guess the last part at the end, if you mentioned, is kind of like what happens after he evens the score or whatever way that happens. But that the first and second beats of this story are, there's little minor changes, but it's essentially the same. It's essentially the same story as the comic.
Not really. The second version of the, so where I got you on that one, I gotta disagree with you, because while the first version, which gets us through to the diner scene, follows very closely Hughes in, the second version where the guy shows up, I mean, first off, he's wearing his finger on his neck as a necklace.
Oh yeah, it's cartoony, it's more grotesque.
Yeah, so it's much more grotesque. And yeah, the barbed wire in the eye and bringing him back, but the reasons being, and the guy coming through, and then you go into the third act, it's not even the brother, it's the mob boss. It's the mob boss's son. The third act's
totally different.
Completely mob boss's son. I mean, it ends up, and it's in Detroit, in New York. You know, there's cops, there's no Mirandizing. I mean, wife's still an attorney. So they kept certain things, but I think they, you know, that's where, if you wanted something that was really like, I think Cronenberg did what Cronenberg did, but if you wanted to, this movie had more potential. I think that they had a hewed more to the comic with the same characters, this movie still would have been dope as shit, especially with him killing Richie as he did in the comic book, because they held him for 20 years and tortured him.
Yeah, that the main difference is his best friend, which in this movie is his brother, instead of him coming back and him trying to even the score, his best friend has been held captive in the comic and he's tortured. And you see that, like the end result of 20 years of torture. There are differences. But the end, I think the first two, I see your point, Fergal, it is more grotesque, more cartoony, but the beats are still there for the first two parts. The third for part sure. is completely different.
For sure.
Well, speaking of the third part, like I have not read the book, so I don't know the differences in there, but I do want to say the third act does feel very rushed. Like, it felt like they took a lot of time in act one and act two, but the third act was like, I feel like it is interesting to hear you guys saying there was a lot of not rewrites, but there's a big changes around that section, because it really does feel like they're like, we need to end this movie. We can't have a 3-hour movie. We need to get this wrapped up real fast, because it did feel very rushed at the end.
It did. There was no longer William Hurt was dramatically underused. That's William Hurt we're talking about, like another heavyweight. If you've seen him in any really cool sci-fi horror movie, this guy's got skills, man. And he was completely underused. And just, I mean, there was more character in the guy who was in the bar. The guy is like, are you Joey? Yeah, we're going to sit and finish the beer and then the Cadillac Escalade, we're going to take it up the way.
Yeah, Ruben. I think his name was Ruben. Oh, you finish your beer. You go out and you go out after you finish your beer. And then after that, he just puts his bottle on the table. And then they go in the car. And then afterwards, they go up to see all the fancy houses. And then I think he says, Richie likes fancy houses. I think he likes the fancy upside houses. Home sweet home. And then Richie comes in, and I like the line where he says, I think Josh Olson mentioned this on the podcast where he did a reference to one of Clint Eastwood's movies, Unforgiven, when he says, so you like that farm life, milking cows and shit? Fogarty thought that he could smell pig. That old fart never knew what hit him, so he thought that you were working on a pig farm or something like that.
Yes.
And that was a reference to Unforgiven, and Josh Olson was so, like, he was such a huge fan of the Clint Eastwood movies the mention to Unforgiven, and he's also a huge fan of the Dirty Harry movie that it's mentioned with Ed Harris's character. I mean, I remember seeing Ed Harris in another movie that I thought was pretty interesting to me, Love Lies Bleeding, the one with Kirsten Stewart and Katie O'Brien, in which he played this like long-haired, almost like mob boss type, and Dave Franco and was in it and all that shit. And I just thought it was really interesting villain in that Russ Meyer type movie, which I thought was amazing.
Now, you guys have hit on a lot of different scenes, but which one of those scenes do you think stood out to you the most?
First one, I think the beginning.
You're talking about the opening scene of the motel?
That's the best scene in the movie.
Yeah, that was done in one shot.
That was a cool scene. Just not the killing of the girl. I thought that was unnecessary, but it also demonstrated the completely mindless violence of these guys. I thought it was unnecessary. You didn't have to do that, but ultimately, that was just like you did not know where that was going when you first saw that scene. That's what kind of threw me off about this whole movie.
Yeah, I thought that the one killer coming out, the more professional looking killer, was actually just, I think that his driver out and kill him. Like something bad had gone down in that motel, and he's like, look at it, like the mess you've made kind of thing. Of course, he goes in there and he's walking through touching everything. I'm thinking, like, how many fingerprints are you leaving in this place? Like, are you trying to get caught?
Clearly nobody does forensics in that area. I think that's why it was small town. Nobody has a forensic situation.
It was so extreme. Like he's going around like dragging his hands across the table, like touching the lamp, touching the phone, getting a drink out. And it's like, man, at least have some sense.
Nobody cared about policing in this movie whatsoever. Do you realize that Joey threw the gun in the lake, right? Like he just threw the gun right in the middle of the lake, which is like the most obvious place to check because why wouldn't they? It's a lake.
Yeah, but it's washed.
Well, not just that. He took out a well-known mob boss. No one's really going to care who did it. Like, the police are going to show up and be like, oh, man, someone offed him. Oh, well. And they're going to move on about their day.
Yep.
Is that the assumption?
Yes. Again, he already faked his. There's obviously no validation of who people are as they're letting people just get business loans with no ID. So it's fine. It works out. Still, I was still like upset with that.
Are we marveling this? Are we making a Marvel jump on this one?
Everyone's pinky swears on their true identity. Real ID had not been invented yet. The one scene we haven't talked about yet, it was the school fight scene.
Oh, yeah. Do you know that actor is, it's funny, and it's Sunny in Philadelphia. That's the funny guy in that show that's on with Danny DeVito. It's just a really crazy comedy show. Sort of like South Park. It's Always Sunny in Philly D. It's always
the student. No, I know the show. I'm trying to figure out who he is on the show.
He's one of the guys who owns the bar. He's one of the three. Yes, he is.
No, he is younger. Not. Nope.
Look him up. I promise
you. Do it right now. Google. We're not going to pause recording. You guys keep going. I'm going to check that out. That is not correct. I know all the guys.
I got my dollar bet, man. I got my dollar bet going on right now.
I got a dollar on this as well.
You have a losing streak going on these dollar bets, Fergal. I mean, you might be in the poorhouse at this rate.
I'm about to turn it around right now. Dollar from the round table. We're about to make this happen. But yeah, that's the guy. So I thought he beat his ass. And I thought that other guy was the typical I get my ass kicked situation because he looked like a dude who needed his ass kicked. He looked like Karen. Is it right?
No.
Is it right? No.
No. This guy's name is Ashton Holmes.
Okay, wait a minute.
Not in any of these things.
All right, hold on. Now I've got
maybe he was on an episode, but no, there's nothing listed for this there.
He looks just like the guy.
He looks nothing like any of the guys on that show.
He looks like the younger version of that one guy in the show.
He looks like the homeless guy they keep tricking to do stuff, but that's not him. That's who I thought it was, and that's not him.
Speaking of getting actors wrong, like for the son, I kept thinking to myself, is that Jesse Eisenberg? Just because the way he looked?
No, I know it's not.
The timing wouldn't work properly.
I'm going all in on this one.
Are you doubling down, Fergal?
I'm doubling down. I'm putting an extra dollar. You know, you're right. He can be mistaken. I am a middle-aged man. I will take effect for that, and I wear progressives. But, you know, I kind of did look like him.
And this is how I pay for the production value of the episodes. Just Fergal keeps losing bets.
Now who thinks all white people look the same, Fergal? Now who thinks
that's reverse racism, and I accept the cause of that and will change. Thank you on behalf of everyone.
Speaking of fight scenes, what did you guys think of the fight scene that happened in the front yard?
I thought it was a well choreographed fighting sequence, like almost like the moment where Joey was coming out and he was right in front, he was like coming out of his form. And just in the moment where he just had to use I think it was like he used like his like the back of his hand, like his knuckles, like he was punching the other guy's nose, and I think he was trying to take him out with his gun, which I thought was pretty cool watching this movie. And I think my favorite was the moment when his son, I remembered mentioned earlier in the film that Tom asked his wife Edie to bring a shotgun because Carl and his men were coming to the house. And then it came back later and he was using the shotgun to blast his stomach. And I thought that's very much like something out of a stylized pulp novel, sort of like Mickey Spillane, Raymond Chandler, Dashiell Hammett, all those types of detective stories from the pulp novels that came out in the 50s and 60s and stuff. But yeah, I thought that was a pretty good fight scene and a really almost like a sort of like a Midwest noir type, like sort of like set in the Midwest, almost film noir, Western type of action scene that I thought was pretty cool.
And it had the second half of, you know, you had the school fight earlier where his son gets into the fight at school and like destroys these guys, which comes out of nowhere. That was one of the things I was kind of like, where did he learn how to fight before he was like playing baseball? So it's not like he was like on the wrestling team. He was just knew how to fight these guys. But then the second half of like the apple doesn't fall far from the tree was him, you know, he saves his father's life. But it's kind of like you have that reckoning of like, this is the kind of life I've led. And my son is now going to lead this similar kind of life, this violent life, this extra, like he's now I've brought the family I thought I sheltered. And now I didn't escape it.
Two things. One, we know how many shots it takes to the nose to push your nose thing up into your brain. So I think we saw that very clear. And number two, in the comic, it was the wife who shot Fogarty.
Well, yeah, his son's not a big piece in the comic.
No.
And that scene where he gets his nose smashed in, that was one of the other ones that was even more bloody in the international version.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Could you be more bloody than that? Because like he hit him like four times. He Van Damme the shit out of him. He was like, I'm watching a Van Damme movie. Or he just knew how to do it. And that may explain the son, because it is in the genes, man. You guys saw the movie Wanted, right? It is in the genes. The comic makes it clear it's in the genes.
I keep thinking to myself, like, is this another Wanted style movie? But it doesn't sound like it. It's not like it's stuck true to most of it.
It's close enough, but they just veer off towards the end. The overall feeling is similar. I think you get the same story beats for the main character, for Tom / Joey, whose name is different or whatever. But it's the same general feeling. They just took some liberties, I think, to make the movie feel more realistic. I think what's in the comic would be over the top enough, especially, as you mentioned, like the finger on the guy, more Cronenberg-y. All these things that are more would make it more of an obvious comic book as opposed to kind of a crime noir film, which is what this ends up being. So I think they made the changes so that it was more acceptable to a larger audience than what would have been in the actual graphic novel.
It got made for awards, and I think it was only 95 minutes long.
Yeah. I think the runtime was actually, I'm about to switch on that, about to talk about pacing a little bit, but the movie was 96 minutes long. Did it feel long enough? Did you want more?
No, that was enough. I think that, again, a movie, you know, it's not really anchored into what you would, traditionally. This is a comic show, right? But we have reviewed Cemetery Man and Garfield, so I guess all bets are off at this point. But ultimately, this movie on its own doesn't feel anchored to any backstory like a comic. Like, you can look at, like, a 30 Days a Night and be like, yeah, that definitely could be a really cool comic book. This does not jump into that. So I think it's long enough for that.
For me, I would say that it ran smooth on its course. I liked the pacing of the film. It didn't feel like it was lagging. The only other thing, which I will get to mention a little bit later, if I had to pick a favorite scene from this movie, well, there's actually two in this movie. The sex scenes between Tom Stahl and his wife Edie in the film. It was the first when Edie was dressing up as a high school cheerleader, and I remembered the line in which she said, "We didn't get to be teenagers. I'm going to fix that." And then she dresses up in that high school cheerleading outfit, and it's very much like, I remember Josh Olson said that Cronenberg said that he didn't want to put like a sex scene in the film, so Josh Olson said, "Well, I'm going to put in two," because Cronenberg said he didn't want it to be too Cronenberg-y, because I think Josh Olson was trying to do an homage to his earlier film, A Crash, which I remember I saw the film, and about a fetish that I think Ebert said that nobody really has. But I thought it's a pretty interesting film. I saw the whole film from beginning to end, and the sex scenes in those films I wouldn't say they were like sexy or warm. They were more like cold and almost like somewhat raw. I mean, I've seen other movies with sex scenes like that, like Lars von Trier, Antichrist, for God's sakes, and all those types of movies. But this one I thought was a little bit pretty interesting. There was that one, and there was the other scene in the staircase that I thought was pretty interesting. It was like, it was sort of like rough. It was almost like just animalistic and almost like something out of another movie I remembered seeing. Or, yeah, I saw The Night Porter with Charlotte Rampling and Dirk Bogarde, where it was like a sort of a SM affair, but it was like sort of that type of thing that I watched. I don't know. I just thought those were two of my favorite scenes in the picture, which I thought was pretty interesting.
Yeah, we did skip all those scenes. Guys, you have any thoughts on those?
The sex scene?
I figured Fergal had a lot to say. I didn't want to talk about it.
Well, you know what I know is that Viggo Mortensen has a tail. That was unfortunate. I found that out in an unfortunate sort of way. He has a little dusty old tail on the back of his ass that I bet he can wiggle independently because he's one of those type. I mean, you can
those
see
those types.
Yeah, I mean, well, they have a vestibule tail.
Tail types.
Tail types. Yeah, they've got tails. They can wiggle them. That's a small percentage of the population. I think that's a skill set we should relish. And that, and there was some, you know, that was like some really taken to a high level Mr. and Mrs. Smith type sex. And I think then she was like, slap, slap, push, push. And he's like, okay, at least I got my business done. And he's just going to sit there. And that's when he drives off. And he's tired. So that's what he did. Hello. And he's like, oh, that Joey. And then he's like, fuck, I got to take a long drive. That's the whole process.
So that's a great answer to the question that Chris asked about pacing. So I'm going to go back to that. The first, I think it was paced well. Like it was a good length. I wasn't looking for more. I just think it was weird pacing. Like if you break into three parts, I think the first two parts, the second part's not quite long enough. Like I would have a little more of Carl trying to like chase him down in town or get more information on him or really like keep coming after them. A couple more scenes where like it was almost there. I think it was at the house, but they're not sure. So there's this more dread in it. And then have that end of the movie be that scene as opposed to having him go to Philly to deal with his brother. I thought that was rushed, like we kind of brought up. So either it needs to be a little longer to stretch out that third part, or it could be the same length, but just stretch out that second part and you can cut the third. It doesn't need to be there. I know the original source material has that third act, I guess. And it's fine because it does kind of tie up. It kind of ties up the fact that he's now going to, you know, live his life again, but you don't know that for sure. It's not like this guy's the boss of the entire mob. He's a boss of a larger mob. So there's still guys that are going to be looking for him. And he was still on TV and you can still find him. So it's like, it didn't really solve any of the problems that the same problems would have been for him at the end of the second act. So it's paced a little weird.
Pretty serious internet.
So I'm actually going to mess up the pacing of this episode and circle back to that scene we were just talking about.
Great.
Only because I was listening to an interview and he was saying how that the first sex scene is supposed to be really between her and Tom, and the one on the staircase is supposed to be between her and Joey. That's why it's supposed to be so different. Like the first supposed to be like a loving experience. The last supposed to be very rough. And in fact, when David Cronenberg was filming that second scene, he thought it was a little too rough and asked the stunt people if they can give him any knee pads because all the banging up against the staircase. And Maria actually had received tons of bruising on her back from it. You can actually see it later in the film when she's laying on a bed.
That I did notice that. Yep.
Yeah.
That bruising came from that. Those are actual bruises. And they tried covering up even more of that.
I didn't know they were real bruises, but I thought that was the intent of that scene, to show that she had those bruises on her.
But what you just said, Chris, made perfect sense.
I try to.
But one of us has to.
But to the pacing of the movie, though, to circle back to that again, like I said, the pacing of the show is all off now, is that, Jeremy, I agree with you. That third act feels so rushed. Either they need to make the movie just a little bit longer to sort of make it not feel that way, or just end it on the second act, because that felt like a good ending. It could have just faded to black, you know, in that front yard. They didn't have to go do the whole Philly thing.
It could even have been him getting the call from his brother and leaving his house in the middle of the night, and that's it, right? You don't know what's going to happen to him, but he's no longer going to be able to be Tom. Different ending, different kind of feel to it, but it would have still been an ending to this movie.
I don't know. Would you add the family piece? Because I think that last piece where the little girl brings out the plate and they all sit down, I think that's the weirdest scene in the whole movie. I honestly think that no one talks about where he's been. No one says anything. They're both crying at each other. Like, he's literally killed 12 men by this point. Like, he's
See, that happens to me every day when I come home from work. No, everyone just does not want to talk about the terrible things I've done.
A lot of crying. Yeah, same thing. I get that.
it felt like I was watching, you know, Genndy Tartakovsky, the guy who did Samurai Jack, Dexter's Laboratory, and all those shows. It almost felt like that because this guy was known for almost no dialogue scenes. And I know he's got a new movie coming out on Netflix. I saw the trailer and I'm like, fuck, I want to see this movie called Fixed. The movie with the talking dog, and it's all about like this guy is trying to spend 24 hours before they cut off his testicles, which I thought was a pretty interesting trailer. So I thought I wanted to see that. And I'm like, fuck, I want to see this movie.
Anytime we can drop the conversation of cutting off someone's testicles in an episode, we know we're on a good path.
It's an interesting movie.
Last time was during Garfield, so that's true.
It worked, exactly. So Viggo Mortensen has been interviewed, obviously, about this movie many times, but he said this is actually one of the best movies, if not the best movie he's ever been in. A perfect film, if you would. Do you agree with him on that?
He's got the Cronenberg directing this movie. I mean, so, you know, you work with guys like Peter Jackson, you work with guys like David Cronenberg. Yeah, you get an appreciation for the way they shoot art. And the way they shoot it is artful. That's their whole purpose in life. Like, there's a few movies like this. And I can't remember all these directors, but when you get an artful director, it can be a bit of a masterpiece. Like that Simple Things movie with, I don't know, where they make the girl Frankenstein. You know what I'm talking about?
No.
Got William Dafoe in it. You guys know that movie?
No.
Won like a ton of Oscars, man. Little Things, Simple Things. I don't know. Jeremy, come with me, brother.
Young Frankenstein?
That was it.
No, it's not Young Frankenstein. It's a new
Poor
movie,
Things? Honestly. Poor Things?
Poor Things. There it is. See, look, I did win the dollar on this one.
The Yorgos Lanthimos movie, I believe.
Exactly. Exact. Simple, kind of unusual. No wonder we say he loved work.
Now, this movie, when it first came out, was very highly rated. People thought it was amazing. Do you agree with that? Does it deserve all the hype it has received?
For me, I thought it received my type of hype. I liked it very much. And now that I'm going to circle back to Mr. John Waters, he did say that he loved this movie and he loved Maria Bello's performance. He called her the best actress of the year. And he mentioned, and this is going to be pure John Waters, so I'm going to put this out there. He mentioned he loved the scene where she vomited in the bathroom after learning that Tom Stahl was, in fact, Joey Cusack. And she thought it was like the best moment was when she vomited after being shocked. So for me, I would say, yeah, I like this movie. I thought their performances were good. And I thought Josh Olson's writing, I know he's done like a few things after this. I know he did like a Batman movie after he wrote the script for this film, and he did a few others. He just recently did a movie with Jessica Alba, Trigger Warning, with one of the co-screenwriters. Brancato or something like that. But I thought it was pretty good.
I really like this movie. I think this is an excellent movie for what we normally cover in this, right? I mean, it's based on a graphic novel, but it doesn't come across as extremely comic booky. Honestly, except for the fact that the original bad guys you see in the hotel, you know, kill the girl and are over the top. Like, there's clearly no goodness to these guys. These are just bad guys. Everything else is actually fairly well balanced. I think all the actors in this, you got William Hurt, you've got Ed Harris, and again, Viggo Mortensen. Like, they all do a great job. Everyone on this movie is, you know, took this movie seriously and did. And in fact, William Hurt kind of does an almost over the top piece of kind of being bad. But at the same time, even then, there's some humanity tied to that. And it still works really well. So, I thought this was a great movie. I can understand why this gets the acclaim that it gets. Also, this isn't why it would win awards, but it starts off and it feels fairly tame. And then you get those actual scenes where, you know, in the diner in front of his yard later on when he's in Philly, where it is that, you know, the name of the movie is A History of Violence, but where that name comes true, where it's just like, that's graphic. And then it goes back to like, oh yeah, now he's trying to, you know, keep his family away from these bad guys. And it's back to being like kind of this tame everyman for a little bit before he fully takes his mask off and he's not. So no, I thought this was an excellent movie.
Do you think that Joey and Richie knew they were going to shoot it out, or do you think that Richie was super confident because he had like four dudes? Because I counted the amount of dudes when he walked in that building. And I was like, that guy's going to kill them all.
Yeah, no, he didn't think he was going to do it. He thought that he was going to get to walk away. He just wanted to see him first, put his eyes on him, and then have his men kill him.
Who walks so slow with a rope? Like, wouldn't you, before you start making threats of killing him, wouldn't you want to be behind him with the long metal wire? Wouldn't that be at that point be the moment you'd want? Because it seemed like he gave him an awful lot of time to react, turn around and be like, oh, threat, and then put his hand up.
Well, he's trying to keep him, you know, relax, keep his guard down. The guy's right behind him with a string. He's going to freak out a little bit.
That's just a bad, bad dude then. You just got to replace the bad guy because you should be able to walk quietly.
I'm wondering why he doesn't shoot him.
Or shoot him.
But this movie, it got high praises. I think this is the most normal movie we have ever seen on this show. If that makes any sense. It
Agreed.
Does not feel like a comic book movie. I mean, except Garfield, right. Obviously. Garfield. And Cemetery Man. But it feels normal. Like, the average person is going to go to this, not someone who reads comic books.
Yeah.
Someone who reads graphic novels. And it feels like a movie that, you know, it feels almost like a Western in a way.
It's Dark Fargo. This is Dark Fargo. And I loved it for that.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it. Dark Fargo. I could see why it got the acclaim it got at the time, because I don't think it had the stigma of someone saying, oh, by the way, this is based on a comic. There's no superheroes. There's no...
I don't think they hyped that part up anyway. I think it was just a history of violence. I think the movie stood and still stands on its own. So, you know, it doesn't need the book or any of that material. And you'd have to go a dig in to find out the material underneath this movie. And who would want to do that? Everyone just stopped at the movie.
Like, there was a movie that came out around the same time about a guy who had a bunch of oil fields. Something about, are you drinking my milkshake? I don't remember the name of the movie.
There must be blood.
This feels like it's in that sort of vein of movie.
Do you know there's a Tamil version of this movie? A movie of this version that was shot in Tamil?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yep. That was actually one of the things that John Wagner, because he's got a pretty storied career. If you dig him up as an author, you'll find out that this movie was recreated, I think, a decade ago. If I'm not sure, somewhere in that John vicinity, maybe even sooner or later than that. But it made a bit of money in Tamil. Oh. And they sent a bunch of thank you notes. They love this guy.
For the casting of this movie, there's only two other alternatives I could find. I did want to get your guys' take on this. For the character of Tom, they originally were thinking about going with Harrison Ford.
No.
A little older at this point. I don't think he could have pulled it off for the age.
Well, I couldn't picture him in that role. I think at that time, wasn't he doing political thrillers, like espionage thrillers at that time?
Yeah, I think that's Air Force One time frame, like stuff like that.
Yep. Jack Ryan.
Yeah, Jack Ryan type characters. I could picture him being in those types of movies, but I don't know if that would have worked with this performance. No.
And the other one was Thomas Jane.
Thomas Jane, I've heard him on an episode of the Movies That Made Me podcast. And I mean, he sounds like a nice guy, but I don't know if I would picture him in this role. I mean, I heard he talks about his favorite heist movies in terms of this. No. I wouldn't picture him in this type of role.
Well, you know, his Punisher movie was the year before this. So I think it would have just been another Punisher movie.
So the real question to me is, would they change the mob from being Italian, not to Irish, but to the Russians?
For me, it would be too close to home. You know, Florida, we have a lot. We have connections to the Russian mob. So
yes.
I feel like it's too close to home for me.
Wow. Yeah. No, that's pretty serious. Yeah, I think...
Chris was trying to get me to go off about the Punisher again. He was trying to get me to go off about the Russian again. And I didn't take the bait. Didn't take it.
No, he didn't. I did see that go down. That is awesome.
What did you guys love about it? What could they have made? How could they have made this movie even better?
I think they could have given us, first off, I agree with Jeremy. I think they should have done more with the pacing. I don't think you shorten up. I don't think you lengthen two, get rid of three. I think you give this movie 15, 16 more minutes. I think that's all it really needs. 15, 16 more minutes, about 100, 110 minutes. You give it a little bit longer. End it the same way. Just give more depth in scene three, a little bit more in scene two. And quite frankly, I don't know why they didn't do the damn finger scene, because that would have been dope as shit.
I hope you have that frozen to use at the start to talk about the finger scene, Chris. I think the pacing is the biggest thing, but... I would like to see an actual correct adaptation of the source material. I think that's also interesting. And I think Cronenberg would have actually made it work, much like Naked Lunch or something that has this kind of weird feel to it. All this other stuff and the effect needs to be there, where it gets more and more kind of bizarre as the movie goes on. But I don't know if that would have been as good of a movie. I just want to see that.
You're really not going to keep the finger thing, are you?
Of course I am.
It's going to be right up there at the top. Let me hedge that by saying finger meaning the cut off finger, not the finger.
Don't save that part.
So actually, I'm just going to say the last part of that. And I am recording video of just you, Fergal, nobody else.
Oh, that's great.
Ever since we had that Spider-Man thing, when he's making the motions for that one, obviously there were changes from the original movie, the original material. Would you guys want to see a retelling of this again, just actually leaning more upon the source material?
No.
I think they should just don't remake this movie and just leave it as it is. If they try to remake it as a series, I'm like, it's sacrilegious for me to see it. Somebody remake something like this. So no, I don't want to see a retelling. I just like it the way it is. I think it's a better as it is. No remakes for me.
Couldn't have said it better than Jordan.
I already said I want to see the original version just to see how they handle things like his long lost friend when he finds him later, right?
But well, I think you can watch the Tamil version, Jeremy. I think if you watch the Tamil version, they might hew more to the original material.
All right, I'm going to hunt that down.
Speaking of hunting things down, should people go out and find this movie?
For me, yes. I think people should hunt down this movie. It may not be when people think of Cronenberg, they would usually think of his early work like Shivers, Rabbit, The Brood, Scanners, or his other work from the 80s and 90s decade. But yeah, I think they should see this movie. And it's, I think, one of his, Chris or Jeremy said it, it's the most normal movie I think he has ever done. And I think it's the beginning of Cronenberg's relation, collaboration with Viggo Mortensen. I know he did Eastern Promises after this film, and then he did movie. And then I think he did a movie where he played Sigmund Freud, and Michael Fassbender played Carl Jung in another film that he did. And then they reunited again in 22 with Crimes of the Future, also with Kirsten Stewart, which is in no relation to the 1970 movie that Cronenberg made. It's not a remake. It's more like he's just using the title, but it has no connection. But yeah, I think people should find this movie because I think it's one of the best.
Yeah, it's just a good movie. Like, I don't have a reason to hunt it down other than that, one, it's not American History X, which is a positive. But I sat down the whole thing, watched it in one sitting. It was a good movie. I did enjoy it. I didn't expect the amount of violence when it showed up. I didn't expect, you know, we mentioned the sex scenes in it. Not that there's, like, I didn't expect the sex scenes, but just the realness of them in both cases and in the different coins. We kind of talked about it like in different ways.
The vestibule tail. That's what you're stuck
on. I didn't notice that, so try to avoid that. Although, I mean, it was a good movie. I did like this movie a lot. And that's without knowing the source material. I didn't know about the differences before I watched this. I watched the whole thing. Then I went and looked up what was different. And I saw some of the panels that were different and kind of the arcs it took. So without knowing anything about the source material, this is a good movie on its own. Definitely check it out.
Agreed. I think it's, I paid $3.99 to see this thing, which is more than I normally like to pay. So I definitely put some cash in the pocket. But for the normal audience, I think it comes on TNT every once every 6 or so months. So I think you can catch this thing on TNT, Sci-Fi, or FX. We have the movies.
People should go see this movie. If it's on, go watch it. It's going to be on some streaming service somewhere, I'm guessing. Right now, I don't think it is, but it's going to circle back around at some point. And yeah, it lives up to its name. It is violent. So don't watch this with your kids, but
yeah,
definitely enjoy it. It's worth the find. So just generally speaking, guys, thumbs up, thumbs down.
I give a missing finger up in the air.
Yeah, I was going to say a thumbs up where clearly the thumb has been ripped off. That's the same thing. This is a solid thumbs up for me. This is a good movie.
Say it's Joey, and then I'm going to add a Joey into that. I'm Joey. Good to see you.
I know I'm going to say this out loud. This is going to be a bit contrarian of me. I'm a Pauline Kael fan. I know you guys do the thumbs up, thumbs down thing from Roger Ebert, but for me, I'll give it a thumbs up. Even though I'm a Pauline Kael fan, I would give it a thumbs up just because I like this film and I loved that Cronenberg did what he did.
Yeah, I 3/4 thumbs up, thumbs up. I mean, it's just good. And it won't blow you away. It won't be like this movie has changed my life in any sort of way, but you're not going to be disappointed either.
No, we changed your life. The movie didn't. We do.
We changed your life. Like, yeah. Like how Cemetery Man changed your life, Fergal, from here and forever. This movie won't do that quite
yet. Changed your life, scarred you for life. It's one or the other.
It does come up every once in a while. I find an intrusive thought getting in the brain sometimes. I just got to push it out. Except for the tits.
So many sound bites from Fergal tonight.
So guys, thanks for joining me tonight. Jordan, thanks for being here with us. And where can people find you?
Okay, so people can find me on Spotify for Creators, and on YouTube Podcast. My episodes drop every Friday at 4 o'clock p.m. And you can also check my blog posts at Film Talk with Jordan Ramirez podcast, .wordpress.com. You can also find me on Facebook, Instagram, and on Blue Sky.
Jeremy, what are you up to these days?
I am always here every other episode of Movie Smash, but also on the All for Weeks, you can find me at the Retrovaniacs podcast, a retro gaming podcast. You can find everything Retrovaniacs at retrovania.net.
And Fergal, where can people find you?
Well, I mean, I'm always on my Facebook page, GothamNightComics.com, Instagram, TikTok. Just started some new things, again, we're still building our comic book, which is now turning into multi-issue, multi-story, potentially multi-platforming it. And we're just getting our nerd on, man. I'm talking about movies with you guys and on my own. What?
And for me, you can always find me at Off Panel Creation, where we're building some piece of nerdy furniture over there. Thank you, our listeners, for spending some time with us today. And if you think this is Aragorn's best role, please send us a note over at movie-smash.com, and we'll see you in a couple weeks. Thank you again for listening, and I hope you enjoy the show. This has been Movie Smash with Chris Roberts, Jeremy Parmentier, and Fergal Amayo, produced by me, Chris Roberts, executive produced by Off Panel Creations, LLC. Movie clips provided by the respective studios. You can rate and review the show at Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You might even find your review read on a future episode. Got a question for us? Visit us at movie-smash.com and send us a note. It too can be read on a future episode. If you haven't already, please subscribe to Movie Smash wherever you listen to your podcasts.
You're really not going to keep the finger thing, are you?